Hello, welcome to South Sea Folk Discovered. This is a podcast that will offer a light-hearted view on the South Sea area, which I have a great commitment to myself. My name is John Sands. I run Spotlight South Sea once a week, so you can go onto YouTube and have a look for that. Catch that, and also I'm now working in conjunction with Louise O'Brien from South Sea Folk, so I'll hand over to you, Lou.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Louise O'Brien and I own South Sea Folk. It's a local magazine and it offers a creative and an independent vibe in the local area. And it aims to bring you highlights of culture, art and design while supporting the local independence that we've got in South Sea. So we've teamed up and our aim is to bring you news around South Sea in a relaxed way that you can enjoy. So what have you been up to this week then, John?
Oh, it's been a funny old week actually. It's been quite quiet at work. It's been very cold as well. I noticed the weather, and we've got builders in at home, so I've got complete chaos in the house where I've only got one toilet I can use, can't use the shower, so it's just been, so excuse the smell if it's a little bit. But it's been done that. I tried to do the South Sea Spotlight or Lick the Lid yesterday, and I did it, and it went really well, and then I found out the sound didn't work, so that was frustrating. So I'm going to do that again, but some really interesting stuff actually on that. And I stood in front of the pier and the history of the pier, all this stuff I didn't even know about. The fact it was in the early 1900s that it was built, and they shortened it during the war because of invasion. They were worried about invasion. It's about three or four fires. There was a ferry that went from the end of it. So it's a fascinating history, and it's looking so good. And I was talking about really diverse subjects, like there's a circus thing going on this weekend for kids, but also then on Saturday there's a burlesque party going on as well.
So you're going to go to both then, John?
Well, I don't think I'm allowed to go to the kids one. My kids are far too old. But the burlesque thing, maybe, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it does show, doesn't it, really, how diverse.
Yeah. The only Christmas do that my husband has said I could go on, he said, he got it all wrong. He basically said there was hundreds of people going from his work. And he said, look, you've got to come dressed as a can-can girl. So right. I was like, right, okay. So I went dressed as a can-can girl, started queuing up at this massive event, which was a black tie event.
Yeah.
All the women were dressed in cocktail dresses. Okay. So what it actually was the can-can girls were the entertainment. Oh.
So you were then part of the entertainment. Did you get on stage and do any of that?
I couldn't go home because it was too far away. And everybody just kept looking at me, laughing or smirking. Yeah. It was like a real thing of the night. But you saying about the burlesque, it just really brought
that. Did you wake up in at nights with cold sweat, reimagining that moment as you
were doing? Well, we always laugh about it now. I was really cross with him on the night because I was like, this is not fair. And I couldn't go home and get changed, but it's fine. No, I didn't get up with the girls. I could have done if I'd had a few more drinks.
Maybe
later on in the night. But yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a funny old week. And what about you? How's it been?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been moving house. It's all a bit stressful with all of that. But, you know, it's just nice to get settled in before Christmas. And it's an exciting thing, isn't it? You know, moving house. You know,
it's tinged with a lot of stress as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's so much to do. And you've got a time you have to do it for and all that kind of stuff.
So. But I've been out and about, because obviously I really promoted Small Business Saturday last week. But I've been out and about in the independence, and there's some lovely, lovely things, to buy for Christmas. So Strong Island Clothing Company have brought out their own beer that they're selling in kegs.
Oh, really? Really?
And it's a really lovely gift for, you know, that beer fanatic. You would love it.
Yes.
And the design, they're very good on design, Strong Island, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're excellent.
For me, that's a really good present to buy. Rose Clover, she's got some amazing gifts in that are real, like, plant focused. So there's cactus socks.
Cactus socks.
Yeah. Well, they're just patterns on. Thankfully, there's no spikes
in
there.
There's no spikes in them.
And lots of really, really quirky little gifts in there. So that's really nice to go and have a little shop. But yeah, just pottering around the independents. There's some lovely things up for Christmas. So
yeah, there certainly is.
So on that note, we're going to bring in Tim. So thank you for joining us this morning, Tim.
My pleasure.
So for listeners that don't really know who you are, can you explain a little bit about who you are and what you kind of, you know, do in Southsea? And then we'll come on to the beautiful little dog, Buster, who is literally one of my favourite dogs that I've ever met.
He's pretty good.
He is a real charmer, and my husband, you know, would adopt him tomorrow because he's just so sweet. But can we just talk about you to begin with?
Yeah, certainly. I am a freelance graphic designer, essentially. I work primarily in branding and packaging. But I've been spending the last few years working with kind of independents and startups and charities, and just kind of trying to take on the best and most interesting work I can.
Yeah, because you did the work with Wendy for the Mighty Boucher.
Yeah, that's right.
When she launched her kombucha, and she did it, you did all of the graphic design and all of the campaign for that, didn't you?
I know, that was a real pleasure, actually, because that's something I had been drinking myself for years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a real privilege to get to work with something that you actually care about and use yourself.
What is this? Sorry, excuse my ignorance, but what, we were talking about a product I've not heard of before.
It's kombucha is a kind of fermented tea, essentially.
Oh, okay.
But it's full of probiotic bacteria and prebiotic compounds.
Really good for your gut.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just have a little glass of it every day, and it sort of builds your immune system. It's fighting off, you know, it's giving you optimum health, basically.
Oh, nice.
So Wendy sells it, and it's also sold in quite a few places around Southsea. So Southsea Deli sell it. Does Brian still sell it at the Hunter Gatherer?
Yeah, yeah.
Brian at the Hunter Gatherer sells it. It's not expensive. You keep it in your fridge. It lasts for a good couple of weeks, doesn't it, if you buy a big bottle.
So what were you doing then for them? So you said graphic designing.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I knew Wendy because I was myself using kombucha as part of a regimen to try and get better from chronic illness.
Yeah.
So she kind of knew me through that context. And again, I've been freelancing because I've been coming back from long-term illness.
Mm.
So freelancing has been my ability to kind of retrain and rebuild skills and kind of gradually return to work, essentially.
Mm. How easy is that as a freelancer? Because I've never done it. So, I mean, obviously it's a nice way to get slowly back into business if you've been ill or, you know, you want to do this gradually. Is it? I suppose it depends what industry, but is it a busy thing? A graphic designer, I can imagine, it's quite a bustling, busy sector.
Well, it's a profoundly mixed bag.
Mm.
So I certainly couldn't have just gone back to a job.
No.
I couldn't have worked in an agency again because I started from a point of so little strength and so little mental agility that I had to kind of piece by piece rebuild it.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's been very valuable. But yeah, it's certainly difficult, and I am a designer, which means I'm very bad at a number of things. Business chief amongst them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I enjoy the design side, but I'm bad at the business side, and our clients might disappear on you or have second thoughts or...
Or want you to do it for free. That's another one, isn't
it? Yeah, certainly,
Do it for free, and then we might do some work with you,
Yeah.
I love that you've collaborated with some really nice people
in
Portsmouth. And sort of this whole freelancing thing... what I've loved, I mean, and like with Southsea Folk, it's the same thing. You know, I don't earn a huge amount of money for what I do. But what I get out of it, the collaboration and the feeling that we're all in it together.
Yeah.
And we can all support each other is lovely. And you have that.
Mm.
And what's great is you can go to the Makers Guild. You're really good friends with, you know, them there.
Yeah.
And I've seen you go there and do some really cool designs. And actually have it in your mind, design it, and then go there and implement it.
Yes.
So it is kind of wonderful. Was it some speakers that you were working on when I popped in that time?
No, I'm afraid not. No. Electronics are beyond me.
What was it that you were making then? Was it some stands for something?
Oh, good Lord. I'm not sure what was the last time.
You're always busy designing something. That's why then, isn't it?
Well, I've been unable to kind of prioritize money, for example, during this time. So I've really tried to do things that I cared about and also take the time to learn new skills.
Yeah.
So the Guild has been wonderful for that because prior, even now I'm terribly shaky, but prior I had no kind of hand skills. I had no kind of ability with tools or knowledge how to use things. And I've been kind of gradually trying to build that and kind of like tinker on things and do things that I'm interested in and and then that I care about.
And if you're interested and you care about something, you have that emotional investment, don't you, which makes you want to do it. It gives you that feeling that you say, yeah, this is something I have a passion for, rather than if you're making widgets, you know, 100,000 widgets a day and you're on a construction line or doing something maybe quite menial. If you've got the ability to have a passion about something, it really does make a difference.
Truth be told, though, I'm enormously good at talking myself out of things.
Oh, are you?
So I have an idea for a project, and I'll start working, and I'm like, this is brilliant, this is working, and then I'll just stop.
That's attention span. I mean, I think I'm like that. I have a very poor attention span.
I think it's more that I kind of have some kind of unpleasant trait of being like, this is a bad idea. You should stop doing this.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier, actually, before we came on, and I asked you if it was okay to talk about it, and we were talking about mental history. And what you were saying that part you were saying there resonated with me around the inner critic.
Yes.
Yeah? Certainly. So something that sits on your shoulder and says, John, that's crap.
Yeah.
John, you really don't want to. They're all laughing at this, what you're doing.
Yep.
And that outlines the inner critic very well indeed.
Yeah.
I think last week we even spoke about mental illness, if you want to put a label on it, or going through a tough time.
It was
time.
When Sharla came.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know if you've met Sharla, but she's doing the Grateful Hearts Club. So
yeah, so listen to that.
So you know, check that out, because it is really lovely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole gratitude thing. I think sometimes as well, like you say with the inner critic, sometimes it's kind of like opening up a little bit to your, you know, close friends, close family, and just being honest with them, and then sort of, and not even that, sometimes it's like being at the Makers Guild and being around other people that are really clever and great at design and things, and then kind of inspiring you, and then kind of pushing you on to get past that tiny little bit that says, oh, I'm going to be rubbish at this, or stop.
It's about
sort of, you know, you're in a room with people, and if, you know, you're all supporting each other sometimes, aren't you?
But you need to believe it yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. That's an important step.
I have a thing that I almost think of as like an internal subroutine.
Mm.
I've kind of labeled it, stupidly, I imagine, as discount for X. And essentially, it's like a little thing that runs in my head that I've only recently become aware of. It's whenever someone says something nice or compliments my work, I find a reason to discount it.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
So I'll have like a little tiny little subroutine that'll go and be like, oh, you know, I don't listen to them. I don't need to listen to them because they're being kind.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to listen to them because they're wrong.
Yeah.
Or their opinion doesn't matter because they're not part of this profession.
Yeah.
So until you learn to internalize things, it's kind of hard to... Yeah.
And you were saying about headspace and that you fell out of love with that, but about meditation and so on and things that can help. And it's not, as this is a thing with mental health, I think there is no one size fits all.
No, definitely not. No. Just like us as humans, we're all completely different.
Yeah.
We learn in a different way. We comprehend things in a different way.
Yeah.
We have to find our own way of our own coping mechanisms, don't we? But let's get back to Buster now, because through your mental health and through the fact that you had real chronic illness and you had to rebuild yourself again, is that the reason why you got your lovely little dog?
Was it to sort of help you?
Because dogs are so calming
and
they really bring so much joy, don't they?
Yeah, I almost forget these days, but yes, I did get him as part of my attempt to recover.
Mm. Yeah. So what? When did you get Buster? When was it?
I know it's 4 years ago because he just turned four.
I completely
missed his birthday.
We should have a cake, shouldn't we? Really?
Anyone that hasn't seen Buster, he's always on the big television in the Guildhall Square, isn't he, as the roving reporter? How did that come about then, Tim?
Okay, I will tell you the story, but it will reveal that I am sometimes enormously daft, because I don't have good motivation for this.
Mm.
Essentially, when I got him, for those that don't know, he's a very small dog. Even as an adult, he's
only... Is he like a sausage dog? Is he slightly bigger than a sausage dog?
Well, he's taller, because he's half Jack Russell.
Right.
But he's 4.5 kilos, so he's tiny.
Yeah.
And great. He's tiny and great. But when I first got him, he was even smaller, obviously. He was a puppy. He was like 1.5, 2 kilos. The tiniest thing imaginable. But he had this kind of insane drive for life, I guess.
Mm.
Like, he was never overawed by anything. He was never intimidated. And I kind of got really curious about, kind of more amazed by it. Because like I am, you know, slowly becoming more and more rational. But certainly at the time I had plenty of anxieties. And here he is, you know, he's like 10 centimeters off the ground. And he's just running up to people and huge donks. And I kind of really
nothing
want to
phases
know,
him.
He's actually become more nervous, which is either a process of aging or a reflection of me.
Or maybe he's lurked. See, there you go. That's what you're doing straight away there. You're blaming what you do on because the dog is getting nervous. Wow. Yeah.
They always see that. They always say that, like, things come into your life for a reason. And because I find like that with Alfie. You know, Alfie's just very much my son. This is my son, by the way, not a dog.
Okay.
but he's always had this real energy of loving life, smiling, running up to people and just being like, hi, you know, I'm here, kind of thing. And Buster definitely has that.
Yeah.
But I think they say that, you know, things, people, they come into your life for a reason. So Buster came into your life at that time that you obviously needed him.
Yeah,
and to teach you a lesson in a way sometimes, isn't it? To say, you know, if he can be...
Sometimes I do look at him and I'm like, not a care in the world.
Yes.
but so how did the roving reporter bit come
into play then? So I kind of became intensely curious about what the world looked like from his perspective. And I kind of, as I often do, I just kind of idly designed something in my head. And it was just like a little kind of camera mount. They wouldn't have to be on his back, so he wouldn't have to carry it. It'd be something on wheels, like a little apparatus he could kind of drag around.
Oh, really?
And I do this often. I just kind of like idly, speculatively imagine things. And then I went to the Guild to check it out, and I remember talking to people about it there. And someone was just like, yeah, okay, go on then. And so then I had to, and I and I did. And then I had to have a reason for it.
Yeah.
And I had to take it, unfortunately, a step further. And I started designing like a little weird logo in which I referred to...
You put a pin on, obviously. This is the audio, so no one can see that.
When somebody sees him on the television in the Guildhall Square as the roving reporter, what are they seeing? Just him pottering around in his own little world, or...?
Yeah, I mean, the dark truth is I've been doing it because no one at any point has stopped me.
Yes.
I just went up to people and I was just like, oh, I have a dog. Would you like to be interviewed by them? And they were like, of course I would.
Yes.
But Southsea and Portsmouth is a huge place for dogs.
There's so much love for dogs.
Yeah. And so much humour. And I mean, like, Dan at the Southsea Deli, he's got a lovely dog called Basil that's got its own Instagram
There's Bare Metal Industries.
He's got Rhubarb.
Which is a fantastic little dog.
Yeah. But I mean, they've got their own Instagram account, so it's great. But I mean, there's so many people that love dogs that I can imagine them saying, "Yeah, I can be interviewed by a dog."
Yes, but it's weird how easy, because I'm as we just discovered, immensely half-hearted about my private endeavors. But it's amazing how easy to convince people have been, because in the first few films, there were three people doing the filming.
Oh, really?
Yes. and at no point did anyone be like, I'm sorry, what? so as a result, I mean, it's the video side has died down now, and now it's becoming a kind of Twitter account. But yeah, it's...
So what is next then for Roving Reporter? Is Buster, is it just going to be a Twitter account then?
I think so. Essentially, the film people who were kind enough to help me, Familiar Stranger, they were students at the time, and they've since disbanded and gone on to work projects. So it's harder to... I can no longer convince these people. They have different priorities.
So you can come on the podcast anytime to update us about Buster.
And I'll give you an offer as well, because I do that which is Spotlight Southsea, and I video that. So if you want to do something like that,
I'd be very happy to.
You would get Buster in, and we'll do a video on
it. But the pins, basically, Tim's got these pins, which is on your jacket, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I actually brought some as well.
He's got these little enamel pins of Buster, and thankfully I got one, so I love it. But you can buy those, can't you, Tim?
Yes, this whole thing, top to tails, is a poorly thought out scheme.
I see a trend going through.
Yeah, like I think this is why I drop out of most projects, but this one people have been engaged enough that. Because while fundamentally it is a very stupid thing, at its heart, I just wanted to do... A lot of things are terrible these days. And I wanted to have a essentially dumb but different lens by which to view things and be like, oh,
light-hearted.
Look. This is a nice thing. This is a positive thing. This is the softest of soft news, but it's a thing we can talk about and you might not know about it.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, you see all those videos. There was this thing, we absolutely loved it, where it was like, what your cat gets up to when you go to work.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you've seen that video. Like them going off to the park on the swings. Oh, it was just brilliant. I just love it. It just gives that lighthearted view of animals, you know, fun, loving.
Mm.
And like I say, people in South, really big dog lovers.
Yeah.
So they can really get on board with this.
So how does, if someone wants to follow Buster then, or someone wants to learn more about what you're doing, how do they do that?
Well, at the moment, I've recently started a Twitter handle, which is @itsdogreporter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Easy to remember.
Yeah.
@itsdogreporter.
Yeah.
And what will we find out on that? Will there be news? Will it be a lighthearted way of Buster sharing news of what's happening around?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm trying to use it as a way of sharing, good local news and good local dogs.
Good local dogs.
This is by no means an endorsement of ignoring the harder news.
Bad local dogs in your hunt?
Maybe we should get Buster to...
I think all dogs are pretty good dogs.
They are, it's the owners that are the bad ones, aren't they?
But this morning I went for a walk, no word of a lie, and there was dog poo everywhere. Oh, I've never seen so much of it in one place. And maybe we should get Buster to do a campaign. Do a campaign that is, you know, please pick up your dog poo.
Do you know what's worse now?
It's terrible.
Do you know what's worse now, though? Is they're putting the poo into a plastic bag, tying up the plastic bag and leaving that lying around.
Yeah,
now you've got poo in something that will be there for hundreds of years.
Yeah, you're essentially just preserving it.
Because poo will, you know, it's not good, but it will run away. The rain will wash it away. It'll go away. Put it in a plastic bag, it's never going to go away. It's just going to be a bag of poo that will sit there for years. Who wants that?
Well,
not me,
Is the, you know, decomposable, you know, doggy bags? There must be.
But put it in a bin.
Put it in a bin.
Doesn't matter if it decomposes.
But we need a campaign, so maybe we can have a chat.
I think Buster should maybe just clean up the streets of Portsmouth.
Clean up the streets of Portsmouth, because it's not good. It really isn't good when you're just trying to walk down the street.
Mm.
But in a nice way, what I love about Buster is he's such a really warm, loving dog.
Yes.
And like I say, we all really love him. He's so
sweet. So we know what Buster's doing. What's the future for you then, Tim? What have you got? You must have set some targets or something that you want to go for in the future.
I've loved freelancing, and it's been enormously grand. But it is essentially an experiment that is now over.
Okay.
Because I've been able to work on some projects I really care about.
Yeah.
But I can no longer afford to. So I'm kind of closing down a lot of my projects. I'm finishing certain things. I'm going to try and segue into working in an agency again.
That's good. So that's like a journey, a step where you were and where you're going.
Yeah,
where you're heading towards. That's brilliant. And you've been working on a new plastic-free skincare range with Wendy. When does all of that come out? Because we're going to try and get Wendy on to talk about that, because she's an amazing character.
Yeah.
She's really interesting. It'd be nice for people to hear about that.
Yeah, Wendy's great to work with, because I enormously care, and I'm terrified about the state of the environment.
Yeah.
And plastic is nightmarish in the sense that it's in our water, in our air, and in our bodies.
Mm.
And every time I work on a project, I always endeavour to make it as environmentally positive as possible. Mm. And Wendy was like right from the start suggesting the same thing. So it was a genuine pleasure to be able to share a goal rather than trying to convince someone it was a good idea. Because ultimately, doing something that is environmentally friendly is often costlier and more difficult.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the economy of scale behind it. But I'm very pleased to say she's going to be launching soon.
Mm.
And all the packaging is biodegradable, it is recyclable, it is entirely plastic-free, and it is printed with Sawyer inks.
Oh, okay. So is there a website people can go to, or is there a way they
Not yet. It's a few weeks away, and she's starting small.
Right.
With body butters, which are actually kind of... She'll describe them better.
And is it the body butters, are they going to be kind of like, you know, really, chemical-free?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because that's what I always worry about, is using products
tested on
with
animals
all the
and all
chemicals.
That kind of
actually, yeah, as I've designed the packaging, I immediately cornered the conversation. But it is worth saying, everything is vegan, it's all natural, and it's never tested on animals.
And that's great for you to work on that project and then see that grow and think you've had a big part to play in that. That's nice, isn't it?
I hate using plastic.
Yeah.
But at some point, it is a trade-off.
Mm.
Because there are no credible alternatives.
No.
So to be working on a project, like I say, she's starting with body butters now, which are, I already love them. But in theory, she's going to be expanding in the future to lip balms, to deodorants, and to bath salts. And lip balms and deodorants especially, there is no credible alternative.
No.
So
I think what people need to... I mean, I've got a friend that set up a whole plastic-free supermarket like up in Sheffield.
Oh, okay.
Really lovely. I'll tell you both about it when we finish. But she had a lot of people get in touch with her that were panicking about their plastic, you know, not real Christmas tree. And she was just like, hang on a minute, just stop. It's fine. You know, you're going to use this Christmas tree for a very, very long time. Long-term plastic, you know, there is a use for
it. It's reusable,
yeah. It's fine, but it's just people just need to stop with the whole one-use plastic.
Yeah, that's something.
Because just focus on that for now. Then, you know, like in my son's lunchbox, he's got a plastic box that I put his sandwiches in. But he uses that every day. We'll probably use that for the next 5, 10 years. Maybe not 10 years, because he'll be 19.
Well, yes. We never know.
But for a long time, and that's the thing. I think that's what we need to get into the mindset of people is, you know, long-term plastic, there is a use for it, isn't there, Tim?
Oh, absolutely. And nothing is terribly easy, I'm afraid. So, for example, using a plastic bag has a lower environmental impact than using a paper bag. For the exact reasons you state. Because paper bags are often used only once.
Yeah.
And they require a lot of water to manifest.
Yeah, there is that. I heard an interesting fact on the radio, actually, about the fact that, you know, the bags for life, that has gone through the roof. And they're not a bag for life. These bags that people... So they go to the supermarket, and a bag for life is actually less biodegradable than the little flimsy things you get at the supermarket. So people are thinking, oh, I'm doing well by buying a 10p bag because it's a bag for life. And actually, bag usage is going up, not down, because of the way they are portrayed in the media and so on. So, yeah.
This is the thing. When I have been engaging with the process, I've been discovering that everything is more nuanced and difficult than you first thought.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will be selling you the assumption of something, which is known as greenwashing.
It's where
something is sold with the implication that it is greener than an alternative. But that sadly isn't always the reality. So being able to actually work on something that is like from the ground up being created for this purpose, it's been good.
Okay, well, Tim, it's been fascinating and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Become friends with that inner critic. I think that's what I found, is if you talk to them in a normal way as a normal person, that's what helped for me. But I think you're doing brilliant, and the work you're doing, and Buster, I can't wait to meet Buster.
He's pretty great.
And also, where can people who are real dog lovers, if they love what you're doing, and they love the idea of Buster, they've seen the roving reporter around, can they get in touch with you to buy one of your pins?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or will you put them in places, independent places in Southsea where they could maybe buy them from?
I suppose I must, because I have quite a few.
How many have you got, Tim?
100.
Oh,
but I know 100 seem like a lot to make, but if you compare that to diamonds, and there's only 100 of these in the whole world.
In the whole world, so there wasn't more than diamonds.
That is so sweet.
Price appropriately.
So to follow you on your Instagram handle, what is it, Tim?
It's at Mr. Ames. That's Mr. as in M-I-S-T-E-R.
Yeah.
And Ames as in A-M-E-S.
A-M-E-S.
Yeah. So that's M-I-S-T-E-R, A-M-E-S.
And that's where they can find out about you.
That's
right. And then we've already discussed about the Roving Reporter Twitter handle. Take care. It's lovely to see you.
And yourself as well.
We'll speak to you again soon.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.